Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time for KER Politics. Going to start out in the first half talking about some subjects that Nikki Haley sent me. Interestingly enough, she talked about some of the things last year that the Biden administration totally failed in. One of them is the failures of America on the world stage, which would certainly include Afghanistan. The second thing would be government overreach. The third thing would be burdensome mandates, why the mandates are killing us. And the next thing would be the refusal to address the crisis at our southern border. Jim, let's try to get this done if we can in the first half. If we can't, we can go into the second segment of the first half. Let's talk about Biden's failures on the world stage. And the number one there would have to be Afghanistan, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Afghanistan represents the largest, most destructive, wasteful military adventure in American history. And the biggest loss in American history. 20 years, a few thousand lives, tens of thousands of lives damaged and hurt, not including the Afghans that were the innocent Afghans that were stuck in the middle of a conflict that carried on forward in this administration. The Biden regime walked away after spending $2 to $3 trillion, left $85 billion worth of very sophisticated equipment, and allowed the same group that ruled Afghanistan 20 years ago to get back in charge. That is absolutely unacceptable. But most importantly, there are Americans still trapped in Afghanistan. Right now, American citizens that are trapped in Afghanistan. He let down our allies by pulling out so rapidly. He failed miserably, and his regime and his advisors failed miserably to plan and execute the proper evacuation, and they did not need to do that. So this is a black eye, not just a black eye, this is a swollen, broken eye socket that will not heal for many, many years to come. People were left hanging, and they still are. And the fact that the news media allows this to go on and American citizens to be trapped by the Taliban is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
Very, absolutely the most important foreign policy failure probably in American history.
Let's talk about the mandates next, Jimmy. That's probably the third thing that Nikki Haley has some real problems with. And you're certainly going to hear this in the upcoming major elections. I think Nikki is probably going to be there either as the vice presidential candidate or the presidential candidate. Let's talk about the mandates. The mandates have absolutely killed our economy, Jim.
The mandates and the overall policies that this administration has put forward are becoming just unbelievably useless with the information that's now coming out. CDC now admitting that the PCR tests don't work effectively and have a hard time distinguishing between the flu and COVID. Now, many people, and I've actually written and reported this well over a year ago, many people knew this, many researchers did, but of course the big tech, the media companies, and the bureaucrats in Washington, supported by Big Pharma, basically denied those allegations. That's created these conditions of lockdowns, you know, the failure, the long-term. They've shifted so many different petitions on all of these issues. And the lockdowns and the mandates are absolutely destroying the economy. And they're really getting people depressed and frustrated. Children being locked out of schools for a year and a half, still in some cases where they're being restricted. Massive tested programs to somehow justify the lockdowns and to increase these numbers of actual cases, when in reality they're not accurate tests, which is really stifling small business and allowing the big corporate Amazon, Microsoft, the tech companies to make a fortune, as well as the pharmaceuticals selling the products, as well as getting government subsidies in order to buy materials and through these massive contracts. An incredible waste. It's absolutely destroying not only credibility of the government, but financially really hurting the American economy and the American people.
No question whatsoever about that. The Chinese, if they're in fact behind this COVID thing, which I would bet my bottom dollar that they are, they have done the conservatives a huge favor, because given the fact that the mandates have hurt America so badly in terms of deaths, I mean, you saw what happened to the mayor of New York, the governor of New York, etc., etc., and in terms of the business climate in America, the mandates have absolutely 100% ruined our country. There is no question whatsoever about that. And it's almost to the point where it's too late to really change much of anything. I don't want to say that we have to start over. That would be a ridiculous statement. But the hole that we have to dig ourselves out of is absolutely huge. No question about that. Let's talk a little bit about government overreach. Jimmy, you got some comments on that?
Well, certainly the federal government attempted to take control of these and all these functions when this Biden regime took over. Now, you know, Donald Trump, and when he was president, he mobilized industry in order to solve a crisis that was a perceived crisis based on the information that was available. And he's sticking with that position. He's very proud of the fact that he went Operation Warp Speed to protect, actually produce the vaccines. The unfortunate reality is there are too many corrupt people inside Washington, D.C., inside the CDC and the FDA that were providing advice, including Anthony Fauci, Deborah Birx, a number of advisors that were providing information that shaped the decision-making out there in order to protect the industry that they are funded by and resourced by. And with that, you've got this federal overreach. Trump administration was actually trying to allow states and communicated directly. What do you need? Let's build hospitals. Let's do a lot of things. They did a lot of tremendous things right up front. When the Biden regime took over and swearing that they would solve the problem and get rid of, you know, Joe Biden on multiple occasions said that he's going to destroy the virus and not our economy. They took over, attempted to federalize across the board in many, many areas. And with that expansion of power and influence, they have basically put so many regulations in and turned back the clock on energy independence. They've allowed these open border problems. They've done numerous things to stifle state initiatives and actually got into fights with state leaders like Ron DeSantis or the governor of Texas and some of these other governors out in South Dakota, Kristi Noem, and basically calling them out and taking more federal control while simultaneously failing miserably on each of these actions, including their budgeting. So, yeah, the federal overreach has been amazing. The damage is significant, and I think you're going to see a significant pushback in 2022.
You're going to see a significant pushback in terms of the upcoming election. That's assuming that the election is straightforward, which I believe that it will be. The last election, I think both the minor election and the major election in 2020 got way too much visibility in terms of inaccurate voter counting. So my personal opinion is, we got a minute left here, Jim, I just want your quick opinion on this. I think that voter counting in terms of the accuracy of it is going to be quite a bit different in the next major election. Got an opinion on that?
Well, what we saw in this recent election in Virginia and of course in New Jersey. In Virginia, you had a massive mobilization of people to get out and help oversee the vote process, and that turned a positive way for Virginia to conservative values and actually tried to make it a little more transparent. So there were some counties still that were very, very, you know, questionable on how their process went. So I think there will be more transparency, there will be more view on it, but it's still a dangerous precedent with the control that the electronic voting as well as mail-in voting.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Okay, continuing on with wrapping up the missive that Nikki Haley sent me about the problems that America is definitely going to be facing here in the relatively near future. We talked about Biden's failures on the world stage, definitely. We talked about government overreach, and we talked about the insane mandates that have been put into place in our country. We also are going to talk about that with our guest in the next two segments. He agrees 100% with what Jimmy said. Now, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in on the southern border. I have a major problem with that. The reason I have a major problem with it is because it's very, very obvious why the Democrats are instigating and supporting the kind of policy where we basically have totally open borders. They're doing it so they can get more voters. It could backfire on them. Jimmy, do you think it'll backfire on them?
So based on polling, most Americans support voter ID, like nearly 80%.
Right.
And most Americans support citizen-only voting. Again, in the high 70s to 80%. And I think the whole border situation was one of the key elements that Donald Trump was elected on in 2016. The Democrats attacked him and made false accusations about children in cages that were actually cages that the Obama administration had. They made all types of accusations as Trump used that to win and gain one of the key elements that he used to win the White House in 2016. So in 2020, you get this kind of, questionable election and the outcome, but
right.
People still have not changed their frustration with the border. And we know that the Democrats look at the California model with the massive influx of immigrants, illegal and legal immigrants, and that they can influence and control those voters. What I think is going to happen is the rest of the country is so fed up and so tired of what's happening, of course, with the violence, with the with just the influx, the cost of these immigrants, and the lack of confidence in the Biden administration. I think you may be right. I think we may see some pushback and maybe significant pushback in 2022. But more importantly, in the 2024 presidential election, if Donald Trump comes back and says, look, I'm going to complete my wall and we're going to do it in the first year, that'll be very powerful and very hard for the Biden regime, whoever follows up. Unlikely that it's Joe Biden, but it'll be unlikely for anyone to back off on. In fact, the Biden regime right now is having to reinstate some of the policies that they overturned, like Remain in Mexico, the deportations. They're having to overturn some of the go back to the Trump level policies that they overturned early on because of the failure and the frustration in many of these communities, in Democratic communities that are just fed up with it. And I think it was a bridge too far. They pushed too far into the enemy territory there, and I think they are going to suffer for it.
Well, I have to tell you, there is an awful lot of pride in America. There's no question about that. There's an awful lot of stupidity on the part of the progressives. I have no doubt whatsoever about that. But I think that stupidity is going to be totally overshadowed by the pride that we have in America. America is a great country. There's no question about that. And the millions and millions and millions of people who voted for Trump in the last election are not going to let this thing go by. I'm not suggesting anything at all like that could be turned into a violent event. I'm just saying I think that the conservatives, of which you are a very, very critical part. I do want to mention one thing here that is not really talking about the border, but Jim was honored by the Republican Party in Whatcom County as being defined as the most important Republican in Whatcom County during the last election, and I want to give him a little credit for that because I think he was. Jim and his wife, Laura, worked very, very hard to further the cause of the Republican Party in an area that is almost exclusively idiotic progressive, no question about that. Jimmy, do you think that the pride in America is going to take over in the next election It certainly did in Sorry to interrupt you, Jim, but it certainly did in the Seattle area in the last election.
So I think the fear of what's happening and the dissolution of the fundamental institutions in the United States are what people are saying, what is going on? You know, do I really want to teach my children in kindergarten about transgender rights? Do I really want to allow anyone to vote in America? Do I really want no voter ID? Do I want a social system that is so overwhelming and so burdensome that it destroys our basic fundamental rights and freedoms? Do I want a federal government that controls every action that I have in my hometown? I think that's what's going to stir people back into action to say, you know what? Push too far. I will make one comment on what you said earlier, that the progressives are not very bright. There's a handful of them that are incredibly bright, and they are manipulating and attempting to control the outcomes across the nation. Mm-hmm. They're using very sophisticated technology. Right. They're using a lot of money, a lot of influence to shape outcomes in elections, like Mark Zuckerberg, we've talked about in the weekly show. There's a lot of things out there that are happening with a very small group of people, very powerful, influential group of people that think they control all of this in order to shape an outcome to their political and financial best interest. And what I'm seeing is that is failing because there's too much chaos out there. And that's where I think they're going to fail. And I think, you know, the border issues, the federal control, the absolute, you know, failure in security, the economic issues, and of course the COVID lockdowns and mandates, these things are all going to come back and they are going to haunt them severely. The Democrats, the progressives, the people that have lost touch with the average American and what they're suffering through right now.
Yeah, it's really interesting what's going on in our country. I simply cannot believe how far our country has fallen in terms of American pride. I just can't believe how far that's fallen. And it's fallen, unfortunately, primarily because of people who are, I know you say there are a lot of very bright progressives out there, and there's no question about that. But I have to tell you, I think for the most part, progressives have lost their pride in America, Jimmy. And I don't think there's any question about that. Now, I happen to admire the Mexican people hand over fist. I admire them tremendously. They're very hard workers. They have wonderful, wonderful regulations in line for voting in terms of if you're a Mexican citizen, you have to have ID if you want to vote down there. There's no question about that. They're hard workers. They have a lot of pride in themselves. And I have to tell you, Jim, open borders is really a disservice, in my opinion, not only to Americans, but also to Mexicans. Ladies and gentlemen, time for a real quick commercial break.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the second half of the Corlin Economics Report. Political. I want to say that we're going to talk about what Big Al thinks are the two most important issues that are going to be facing the United States this next year, unfortunately, during a progressive administration. One of them is Russia and one of them is China. I think China is going to be huge. Russia is something that Jason Kilmer, our guest, has an awful lot of experience with, as does Jimmy. You guys, what do you think is going to happen in, regarding America and Russia in this next year?
Jason, you go ahead first.
Absolutely. So what we're seeing from Russia is that they are rejecting the status quo that has sort of existed as it related to the different security stances of European countries. What do I mean by that? Look, the list of demands that they released would essentially preclude any other additional countries from joining NATO, but would give de facto foreign policy autonomy to the areas within both Georgia and Ukraine that they have either already effectively annexed or are threatening to. And so what we're seeing is a Russian rejection of the status quo. Where that gives me heartburn, right, is not just that Putin poses an imminent threat to European stability with the military buildup, but that this administration bent over backwards to try to convince them to come along on some of these multilateralist projects. When the East Coast pipeline in the United States shut down, or when our food supply was targeted by Russia-based actors, when we thought to hold them accountable for some of the other past hacking, when we gave up on enforcing the Nord Stream 2 sanctions, these were concessions, calculated concessions, to try to induce a change in Russian behavior. And what did Putin do? He stared at that and realized he could up the ante even further.
You know, Jason, I agree completely with you on these positions. And what is a lot of people do not understand, the Russian psychological mentality, as you know, Russian foreign area officer I spent and Russian linguist, I spent many, many years working the problem. And people do not understand. The Russians look very strategically in a chess game, almost like the game of Risk. And when they're looking at Crimea, they know the Black Sea Fleet was critical for their year-round ability to actually protect Kappa anywhere in the world, the only non-frozen port in wintertime that they had. So they had to take Crimea from a geographical standpoint. And I actually got in arguments with people in foreign policy discussion at the University of South Carolina explaining that, you know, Eastern Ukraine is essential geographical route, supply route, line of communication to sustain Crimea. They will go, and this was 6 years ago, they will push on that effort. And many of the experts, even Russian people that were there, said, no, this is not it. And what we're seeing continually with a weak U.S. Policy that fails to understand their objectives is a continual push by the Putin regime in order to consolidate itself and absolutely separate itself from any Western ideological principles or powers. And it makes it very challenging if you do not understand and look at the problem as they see the problem. And I see right now they're pushing it. NATO's having a very difficult time without U.S. support, even though Jan Stoltenberg, the chair right now, is trying to push agendas to get more tension and pressure. If the United States and the military and the entire DOD complex does not support that, Europe really has limited ability to influence it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the Secretary General, right, is when I read his statements, they're as good as they can be given the shifting sands underneath his feet, right? And so what I tell people is, very often what we're hearing from this administration, you talked about, right, the Black Sea, and if you think about the moves that Russia's made over the past X amount of years since the invasion of Ukraine, treating the Sea of Azov essentially as their own, you know, what has been called a Russian lake, and then harassing ships, and then trying to spoof the coordinates of U.S. and British ships, they will take these aggressive actions, and then we'll run one patrol through, and it'll seem like activity. Right, and we'll see headlines, tensions rise or tensions cool. Underneath it all, though, no, it's not changing anything fundamentally. What Putin has done in the past 13, 14 years is invaded two countries, and he has taken de facto sovereignty. If you just think about the Crimean Peninsula and let's say the two parts of Georgia that he took, that's about 2.5 million people. Well, historically, that's not a small pace of marching west. And so what I try to tell people is, I say, all of the things that seem like real politic in the short term are being revealed as insufficient. And I think that's where we're finding ourselves at a breaking point, where these fictions of action on behalf of the West are getting revealed in very uncomfortable ways.
Jim, I got a question for you real quick. If I can just jump in here for a second, Jimmy. Jason, I got a question for you real quick, and that is... Russia, at least here among pundits on the west coast of the United States, really is not nearly first and foremost as is China right now, which we're going to talk about in the next segment. China is very, very much in the forefront right now with the situation with Taiwan, et cetera, and with the potential Chinese involvement in the COVID virus. Russia seems to be somewhat under the radar right now. Why do you think that is, at least in the press?
I think it's twofold. One is just from a sheer economic perspective, we consider Russia a declining power. And I think there's a fault in that analysis because I think that makes them more dangerous, not less. But also because we kind of understand that the conflict that will shape world affairs, not just European affairs, is this rising power, China, that is, you know, the historical parallels between other rising powers that are engaged in both expansionism, an internal state-making process, which is what we're really seeing as Xi sort of continues to feed a new national narrative, bringing in elements of Confucianism, et cetera. So I think that's the argument we're primed for. For a decade, we've talked about the pivot to Asia. And quite frankly, overall, it's just because I think China does pose the bigger threat, just maybe the less immediate one.
You know, my perspective on Russia, it is declining. Demographically, it's declining. They still carry a large, you know, we subsidize through cooperative threat reduction. We subsidize their ability to reinforce and improve their nuclear weapon systems, unfortunately. Through DITRA, Defense Threat Reduction Agency, and some of the non-Luger funding. At the same time, they do have less ability to, in many ways, to influence outcomes, though what appears to me is we are allowing them, actually, not only we, when I say we, I mean collectively the West, the Western Europeans, the United States, allowing the Russians to have more and more influence as we see more and more, not only territory, but diplomatic influence to Russia. And the unfortunate reality is that continental Asian, if you're looking at it again from a geostrategic perspective, if you have two very influential, powerful entities in that Asian continent, it becomes very problematic in the long term. From my perspective, not a direct correlation, but what we saw in World War II with Russia-Japanese types of influence, if we do get into conflict, it makes it very challenging. And what I see is this mistaking blunder towards conflict as we allow, through appeasement and negotiation, to continue on. And we only have about 15 or 20 seconds left.
Yeah, we do only have about 15 seconds. So, Jason, just let me go in this direction. I am very, very concerned about China. I've had a lot of experience with the Chinese business community over my career. I'm very, very concerned about China. And getting into that, the reason I'm concerned about it is because I am firmly convinced that China is playing a major role in the COVID situation, has played a major role, I guess I should say, in the COVID situation in America. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be right back with Jason Kilmer. Stick around. Welcome back. Time to wrap up KER Politics, chatting with a really, really interesting, highly qualified guest, Jason Kilmer. Jason was referred to us by his publicist. We spent a fair amount of time chatting with him on my mic. I got to tell you, between Jimmy and Jason Kilmer, these are two of the best interviews, in my opinion, that we have ever done. Jason, let's flip over to China. We talked about Russia in the last segment. I want to go over to China right now. I think that China represents the largest threat to the free world. I don't want to say that Russia does not represent a threat, because it certainly does, but China, in my opinion, is definitely number one. Would you agree with that?
I would, and I'll take an interesting, I think, angle in the way to express that is, so we're still dealing with the coronavirus. 4.5 million people, maybe 5.5 million, have died around the world. And the world cannot marshal the strength to pressure China into an effective investigation. So what does that say about China's power vis-a-vis the rest of the world order? If we are not willing to crack down on a country where a situation originated from that killed literally millions of citizens around the world, wow, that is an indictment on the other powers of the world and an assertion of China's strength that I think echoes.
You know, this is very, very concerning to me personally to watch not just the failure to mobilize, to ask questions and demand some answers through an investigation process, an open investigation process, but to actually watch international organizations like the World Health Organization, OSCE, NATO, EU, the United States State Department actually making excuses and helping support an authoritarian surveillance state regime continue to perpetuate the cover-up that they have or any responsibility for what has been the most devastating, most significant event in human history, that affected so much of the world economically, both medically, but more importantly, the absolute like breaking of different ties and institutions that have gone across borders. And in my view, at the support of not only global corporation elite that are basically now selling out to the Chinese, but also to the governments that are most threatened in the long term by the expansion of a Chinese-type regime. And to me, it is very disconcerting, and I think many people fail to see that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'll jump in and say what we're witnessing is very analogous to what we were witnessing about 100 years ago. And the personalization, which is an interesting verb, but of this regime under Xi, right, who's just about to be cemented for another 5 years. Maybe he holds on longer than that, maybe he doesn't, but his personal credibility is now at stake for things like taking Taiwan. And anytime you see, right, we've seen this movie before, a dictatorship exists, one dictator ends up coming in, corralling control, trying to build that sort of cult of personality, hence, they have to try to purge even mocking cartoon images of him. We've all seen this play before, guys, and it doesn't end well, especially because of the groupthink and the fear even within that governing body itself when there's one man that no one can say no to. And that's where I'm afraid we're headed.
Yeah, it's very disturbing. And the unfortunate reality is they do hold so much economic influence and power, and they have spent a tremendous – the Chinese Communist Party has done such a good job through Belt and Road initiatives, through these expansive processes, expanding their diplomatic power, their military power, economic power, and the information. And they've gotten people like Tim Cook negotiating with Apple and sacrificing data and control to help them build their surveillance state system in order to get into the market to sell more iPhones. And I recently read it was about $285 billion deal that apparently he cut. And you've got many, many global corporations that now look at the opportunities to go into China. And I will say many of them are the media companies that actually used to be pretty well driven in the United States and most influential and powerful. ABC, Disney, NBC, Comcast, CBS, Viacom, CNN and the whole AT&T network. They're all looking at that opportunity. Multiple billions of dollars worth of investments will go tenfold in a 10-year period from many of their analyst perspectives. And you get JP Morgan Chase analysts, you get some of these other analyst corporations that actually advise, BlackRock and then these big companies that are advising, hey, this is the future, this is where to go. And they are sacrificing the basic values that allow them to capitalistically increase the power they're at today. And they're doing that very, very rapidly, selling out data, selling out information in order to look at that capital gain or whatever that comes from that. And it's going to, absolutely, in my view, it's going to come back to haunt all of the world with the level of control that Xi is attempting to seek. And then, again, as you mentioned, what's happening behind the scenes inside the Communist Party itself. It's a little bit, you're right, we've seen this story before, but it's also incredibly disturbing. to see it, to understand it, and to know that many other people see it as well, but they're afraid to say anything because they will be crushed both. And this is the biggest problem with the tech industry and these same big media companies that really silence the voices of what's happening in the future.
Any comments, Jason?
Yeah, and I'll say I agree with that. And I think what we're going to begin to understand is these companies as collaborators. And I think the American people are starting to have that awareness of those daily censorship and self-censorship on behalf of these companies, right? Where not only are they waiting to hear from Chinese authorities, very often they will just self-censor ahead of putting out a media product. But the American people, I think, are going to start to wake up to that. And I think in a decade or two, we're going to look back on that, much like we looked at some firms that cooperated with certain regimes back in the 1920s, 1930s, and 1940s.
Yes, certainly Siemens and Mitsubishi, some of these companies, many of them are still around, unfortunately. And that's a problem when you don't have accountability for people that are actually influencing outcomes in elections because there's so much money and power, and that they're appeasing them.
Apple, yep. I think that accountability word is important too, right? Because I look at this administration, they came into power saying, we're going to pursue these big bets. We're going to do these multilateralist projects on climate and on Iran. And here we stand 1 year in, and they couldn't even get Xi to show up at the Glasgow summit. Yeah. And the Iran deal is dead on arrival, and they held on to 2015 expectations in 2021 for what was achievable there. And so what we're not seeing on behalf of the foreign policy establishment here in D.C. is the right degree of accountability for what are objective failures. These are objective foreign policy failures, and I think D.C.'s gotten a little too comfortable in that regard.
You guys, we're going to have to wrap this thing up because we've only got about 2 minutes left here, but I have time to ask each of you, not just you, Jason, but both of you, let me tell you what I think the bottom line is in the United States here in terms of how we're acting. I think it's a case of nationalism versus globalism. On the side of globalism, you certainly have Jeff Bezos, you certainly have Bill Gates, and you certainly have Apple. There's no question about that. I think once that conundrum can be solved, and perhaps America can come together once and for all, whether they want to be nationalistic or globalistic, I think then a lot of these problems might be somewhat solved. Jimmy, why don't you start out and then turn it over to Jason, if you would.
Yeah, we just got just a few seconds here, and I really think that there has to be action in this next Congress that actually takes away some of the power and influence of some of these major corporations that are actually selling out those fundamental principles of the Constitution that actually allowed them to get to where they are.
Agree or disagree, Jason?
I agree, and I think that, you know, we see this turn towards nationalism, which is a good thing. We're also turning inwards, which I totally understand, but we have to be careful that if we turn inwards too far, we're setting ourselves up for big problems towards the end of this decade.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been one of the better shows. Jason, thank you so much. Jimmy, you're wonderful. Thank you.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.